Acordia, friends, you are all very welcome this morning. I particularly like to welcome anyone joining us today who's coming for the first time, either online or is sitting with us in this beautiful place of worship this morning. My name is Frank Kelly, and I'm a member of this congregation. It is the tradition of this church that a member of the congregation takes the service from time to time, and today it is my turn. The title of the service today is We All Belong. The overall message is about equality and about belonging to a society that goes beyond accepting us, to a society that celebrates us in all our diversity. Our belonging also has to allow for our need to be authentic, to feel safe enough to truly be ourselves in the service of our fellow human beings. I have known great bravery in my life. I've heard stories of my father running into a house that was on fire to save my younger cousins. But I've also seen great bravery when members of my family came out and married their same-sex partners at a time less liberal than now. In recent years, I have seen the bravery of people born by chance as one sex, but being brave enough to say to society, no, this is not me, and transitioning to their authentic selves. I hope the messages today inspire you to be your authentic self in life, in love, and in your careers. We'll start with the opening words. In this free church, we come together without creed, focusing instead on the core values of justice, equality, and compassion, of mutual acceptance of our diverse ways of being as we seek to connect ourselves more fully with the unfolding truths of life and of our world. We come together in shared conviction that all people deserve a voice in matters that concern them, and that it is up to each of us to protect the rights of all, particularly those who, for whatever reason, have long been held in silence. We commit together to affirm in our actions, as well as in our words, the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. We light this chalice to celebrate the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And we light the chalice to reaffirm the historic pledge of liberal religion to seek that justice which transcends mere legality and moves towards the resolution of true equality, and to share that love which is ultimately beyond even our cherished reason, that love which unites us all. We'll have our first hymn this morning. It's number 25, God of the Earth, the Sky, the Sea, number 25.
Thank you.
We gather as a congregation in faith, not a faith in any one religion or one God or any one way. We gather in a faith of power of diversity, the power of love, and a hope of a world transformed by our care. We gather in faith in ourselves and those around us, not a faith that requires perfection or rightness in one another. Rather, that in our shared imperfection, we may learn to stumble and fall together. Faith that we will help one another to rise and try again. Today's reader is Peter Wright. Peter.
I'm very honoured to be part of this community. I was introduced to the readings of Khalil Gibran through this church, and I got married here about 12 years ago to the and Khalil Gibran's reading, "Love one another, but make not a bond of love," I found a very enjoyable and useful guide. And this is another part of his writings. I used to think that Khalil Gibran was a mystic, very well established from way, way back. And it's only recently I've realized that he was born in the Lebanon about 1853. And he moved to America and lived there. I think he died when he was about 50-ish. And this is the reading. "And an old priest said, 'Speak to us of religion.' And he said, 'Have I spoken this day of aught else? Is not religion all deeds and all reflection? And that which is neither deed nor reflection, but a wonder and surprise ever springing in the soul, even while the hands hew the stone or tend the loom? Who can separate his faith from his actions or his belief from his occupations? Who can spread his arrows before him, saying, "This for God and this for myself, this for my soul and this other for my body"? Your daily life is your temple and your religion. Whenever you enter into it, you take with you your all. Take the plough and the forge and the mallet and the lute. The things you have fashioned in necessity are for delight. For in reverie you cannot rise above your achievements, nor fall lower than your failures. You take with you all men, for in adoration you cannot fly higher than their hopes, nor humble yourself lower than their despair. And if you would know God, be not therefore a solver of riddles. Rather, look about you, and you shall see him playing with your children. And look into space, and you shall see him walking in the cloud, outstretching his arms in the lightning and descending in the rain. You shall see him smiling in flowers, then rising and waving his hands in trees."
We will have the children's story. I can see one very young child over there, so I think we'll leave that young person where they are. There's lots of people here young at heart, so I'll tell the story from here, if that's okay for everyone. This morning's story is set in the jungle, and it's about a donkey, and it's about a tiger, and a lion. One day, the local donkey went up to the tiger and said to the tiger, "Did you know that the grass is blue?" And tiger said, "No, the grass is green." And donkey said, "No, the grass is blue." So they fought whether the grass was blue or the grass was green. So they decided that they would go and visit the lion, who, as you all know, is the king of the jungle. So they got to lion's house, and donkey said, Lion, isn't it true that the grass is blue? And Lion thought for a second and said, yes, it is true, the grass is blue. So the donkey continued and said to the lion, Lion, you agree with me, but Tiger doesn't. Will you punish Tiger? And the lion said, I will. And he said to Tiger, Tiger, you may not speak for a whole year. And this really made Donkey very happy. So Donkey went off singing, the grass is blue, the grass is blue. Happy Donkey. Unfortunately, Tiger was not so happy. He was sitting in the corner and he said to Lion, Lion, you know and I know the grass is green. Why did you punish me? And he said, I punished you because you wasted your time arguing with Donkey, who, no matter how much or how much information or evidence you give him, it won't matter. He'll still think the grass is blue. So the moral of the story is this. There are donkeys out there. So don't waste your time arguing with a donkey. Have fun instead. We will have our second hymn, number 23. Bring Many Names, number 23. I counted my years, and from that I've less time to live from here on than I've lived up to now. I feel like a child who's won a packet of sweets. He ate the first with pleasure, but when he realised there were only a few left, he began to enjoy them intensely. I no longer have time for endless meetings where statutes, rules, procedures, and internal regulations are discussed, knowing that nothing will be achieved. I no longer have time to support the absurd people who, despite their chronological age, haven't grown up. My time is too short. I want the essence. My soul is in a hurry. I don't have many sweets left in my packet anymore. I want to live next to human people, very human, who know how to laugh at their mistakes and who are not inflated by their triumphs and who take on their responsibilities. Thus, human dignity is defended and we move towards truth and honesty. It is essential, and that's what makes life worth living. I want to surround myself with people who know how to touch hearts, to grow with gentle touches of the soul. Yes, I am in a hurry. I'm in a hurry to live with the intensity that only maturity brings. I don't intend to waste any of the leftover sweets. I'm sure they will be delicious, much more than I've eaten so far. My goal is to reach the end satisfied and at peace with my loved ones and my conscience. We have two lives to live, and the second begins when you realize you only have one. The next prayer will be followed by a time of silence. The silence will be brought to an end by a recording of John Lennon's song, Imagine. To love life is to notice the wonders that abound. To notice the wonders that abound is to be grounded here and now. And to be grounded here and now is the beginning of finding love for this life today. Let us ground ourselves in this instant, in the worship of all things good and right. Kill. I'm delighted to announce today our address will be given by Lilith Farrell. She is TenAid's National Community Development Officer. Her work focuses on promoting mental health, resilience and capacity building within the trans community in Ireland through community events and liaisoning with trans peer support groups around the country. She will be covering the topics of authenticity and the bravery from the perspective of the trans community. Thank you, Lilith.
As if I wasn't tall enough already. Bravery is a word that I and many trans people struggle with. To be honest, I hate being called brave merely for being trans. What is bravery anyway? When I looked up the words, it said a courageous person. When I looked up courage, it pointed back to bravery. So I guess it's one of those circular terms. Who gets to define bravery then? Well, it's the powerful, isn't it? Do the acts that you do in spite of fear, danger, and pain benefit their interests? You're brave now. Occasionally, however, those that suffer under systems of oppression but manage to survive or even thrive are labelled as brave too. Joe Biden, for example, has been quoted as saying, transgender people are some of the bravest Americans I know. It's a common turn of phrase among cis people who purport to be allies. There's a meme that often swirls around the internet when discussions invariably come up between trans people when it comes to concepts like bravery, authenticity, and resilience, etc. It's an illustration of a World War II plane with a bunch of red dots symbolizing bullet holes. The meme represents survivorship bias. When you meet an out and proud trans person, you've met one of those planes, were shot to pieces. In my late 30s, in my seventh year along my transition journey, I have a lifetime of memories of all the instances where the world I've moved through tried to shoot me down. When I was 5, during a time when being LGBT was illegal, my babysitter brought her entire family in to laugh at me when I said I wanted a doll for Christmas. That day, I learned that I wasn't allowed such things, that I was designated into the blue pile because of what the doctor who delivered me saw between my legs, and to desire such things was worthy of ridicule. I didn't understand it, but it made me feel bad, so I didn't get a doll. I learned to play by the rules and not question them, despite how it hollowed me out inside. When I was roughly 12, I heard a discussion on the radio that said approximately 1 in 35,000 people assigned male at birth were transsexual. Growing up near Drogheda, a town with a population at the time of approximately 35,000, I was told it couldn't possibly be me. When I was 14, Dan International sang at the Eurovision Song Contest and subsequently won. It was the first time I'd ever seen a trans woman in a positive context. The morning after, on the car journey to school, another radio presenter joked that you could tell she was really a man by the size of her feet. I learned that trans women were deceptive, fake jesters out to trick us. The big trans reveal scenes in movies that I watched later into my teens, like Ace Ventura and The Crying Game, taught me trans women were disgusting to the point of vomiting. When I was 21, I met with and hung out with a trans woman for the first time. I instantly connected with her. I could feel that I was like her somehow. I saw how others actually treated her with some modicum of respect. Maybe this is possible, I thought. One night, blind drunk, I confessed this to my partner, who told me she would leave me if I came out. So I blamed the drink, took it back, and carried on trying to convince myself that I was what the world kept telling me I was for another decade, until I finally understood that it was in fact you who were all wrong, and what you were bullying, gaslighting, mocking, and threatening me about was just me. I didn't need to play by your rules, and really, I should, as Marsha P. Johnson used to say, pay no mind. I could deny it like you wanted me to and die, because it was killing me, or face the consequences and maybe live. I chose to live, and as Stonewall veteran and black trans woman, Miss Major Griffin Gracie says, I'm still fucking here. Was that brave, though? Interestingly, the antonym for both bravery and courage is cowardice. Does that make closeted trans people cowards? If I died, would that have been a cowardly act? My story and my experiences are a little cliched, perhaps. When we look where the bullet holes are on the planes that return from battle, the instinct is to focus on those areas and perhaps consider adding more armor. However, the planes that crashed and fell out of the skies in the same battle were the ones that were likely shot in different areas than the ones that returned. The trans people who are out and about today all have their own traumatic experiences. When we are expected to share them and we are told that we are inspiring and brave, it unnerves me. If we are to teach others some lesson or to inspire others, our mere survival isn't it. If to die isn't cowardly, then to live isn't brave. The trans people you see are resilient because we've had to be in order to survive. We're authentic because we always have to prove ourselves to others as authentic. We belong if we are feminine, but not too feminine, and vice versa. Push for reform over direct action. Are white, settled, middle class, educated, articulate, maybe open to debate, use the right tone, don't upset the status quo, etc. To label us as brave is to reduce our survival down to reasons of personal character, strength, and morality. It removes the collective responsibility that you all have to challenge the systems of oppression that make it so that others who didn't, wouldn't, or couldn't fight, or were unlucky or lacked other privileges, also get to be themselves and survive and thrive. We need to focus on those planes that didn't make it to get the full picture. But more importantly, you need to stop shooting and stop others from shooting. You need to create the circumstances for peace so that we can all fly. It might also be tempting to think that, sure, if we are just kind and let kids play with whatever toys they want and wear whatever clothes they like, challenge our own preconceptions of trans people, masculinity and femininity, and call out the odd transphobic joke, then it's job done, right? Unfortunately, that's only half the battle. In many ways, society has moved on so much since when I was a kid. When I was a teen, there was no out LGB kids in school besides me, and I was outed as bi against my will. In fact, friends of mine, seeing the bullying I was subjected to, who claimed not to be homophobic themselves, chastised me and said I should have waited until college to come out. Nowadays, primary schools share videos online of their pride marches. Many schools have out trans kids in their ranks. Society has come so far. We voted for marriage equality, lads. When legacy media like RTE's Liveline dedicated nearly a week to a transphobic group on their airwaves, their coverage was largely condemned. the Taoiseach expressed his support for the trans community and stressed that he didn't want a UK-style debate here. However, what struck me was that there was a thread throughout the narratives of support coming from well-meaning cis people that centred around trans people being inherently vulnerable and marginalised. The mental health issues and suicide rates were referenced without much context. For me, it all felt a little infantilising. So which is it? Are we weak or resilient? Are we brave or in need of protection? Are we not talking about two separate groups of people here? You know, it's the same people. And no one was explaining why either. It can't just be because some people haven't been kind to us, surely. Correspondingly, at the tail end of this week of trans awareness, and with an eye on Trans Visibility Week in the spring, as a trans woman, I often find myself grappling with what I often find myself grappling with are the premises of these weeks in the first place. The narratives that cis people tell and the ones as trans people we feel compelled to feed to cis people. Trans people are valid, trans women are women, trans white rights are human rights, etc. are honestly such empty phrases for me. No one outside of my community, it seems, thinks of the inherent power imbalance at play yet again. How much more aware in the midst of a 7-year media culture war do we really need to be about trans people? No visibility without agency, as my mother always says. Again, this cis narrative causes harm. Instead of listening to trans people and finding out why, instead of listening to people's voices being seen as capable of articulating our own needs or, in fact, our demands, the default inclination is to see cis clinicians and parents as the experts and authorities over our bodily autonomy. Therefore, we are seen as a pathology, a mental health diagnosis to be gatekept. Comorbidities are used as a stick to beat us with and not understood in the context of transphobia and cis normativity in our personal and family lives, communities, and society. Our bodily autonomy is revoked if we are not deemed to be a true transgender as defined by cis people, or if their multidisciplinary teams feel we are too poor, too neurodiverse, too non-binary, too sexual, not sexual enough, etc. And the outcome? Last week it emerged that Ireland has the worst trans healthcare in the EU. Adolescent healthcare collapsed entirely 2 years ago, and the waiting list for the only dedicated adult clinic is now approximately 7.5 years. The form of care provided to us, if we get it, is also dehumanising, stigmatising, humiliating and traumatising. The trans community's call for healthcare in our communities are just like everybody else, through our GPs, based on belief and respect. That doesn't require us to divulge our sex practices and intimate personal and private lived experience. They're roughly dismissed because reasons. We are not listened to, and our own expertise and wisdom is rejected. It's so frustrating and distressing. You need to do better, and that starts with treating us as equals. I also think it's interesting that when cis women were distributing and taking abortion pills before repeal, it was seen as a failure of the state and a major catalyst for change. In contrast, when trans people self-medicate, it's seen as an immoral act that's outside what's deemed acceptable rather than as a challenge to our failed, broken, toxic, psychopathologizing and gatekeeping model of care. In the case of trans women mostly, a predominantly white, middle-class, middle-aged and straight cohort of conservative cis women are seen as the authorities over our right to womanhood, and therefore our right to access changing rooms, toilets, and rape crisis centres. Our gender and access to a social and private life can be revoked if we cause discomfort in others, trigger them, and attempt to claim our fair share of resources or opportunities. If a trans person asserts themselves or gets angry or upset over all of this, we are invariably labelled a trans rights activist. We're perceived as biased, of being woke, or engaging in cancel culture. And the toxic outcomes of all of this results in bomb threats to hospitals in the US, sports bans, conversion practices not being outlawed for trans people, don't say gay bills, supportive parents threatened with social services, and thugs who feel that they can attack, beat, and kill us in the name of protecting women, children, and threats to their own masculinity. I think all this might be a significant contributing factor in our vulnerability and marginalization, don't you think? So if trans people are or aren't brave or cowardly, resilient and vulnerable, marginalized or privileged, etc., is there anything that we can offer in matters of spiritual or on matters of human or personal growth and development? You'll often find that in other pre-colonial cultures or in various times throughout history, trans people have found themselves in spiritual and religious roles. So we do have form, I guess. What we do offer is perspective. It's often a trope within filming, when filming trans people, to stick us in front of a mirror in an almost narcissistic fashion, obsessed with appearance or tormented by physicality. I think trans people are actually the mirror. We can reflect back society's assumptions and preconceived notions on sex, gender, gender roles, gender expression, and show that there are things, in fact, that these things are in fact malleable and not unquestionable or somehow in the natural order of things, and highlight the ways that they do or don't benefit us all. When I was chatting with the trans historian Susan Stryker for an article in GCN earlier this year, she offered an insight that I felt was quite profound. She stated that trans people are proof that everyone can fundamentally change. If I can change something as profound as my sex, despite all the societal and cultural pressure not to, that means that everyone can change aspects of themselves and parts of their lives for the better. It's not that we're somehow special or have any superpowers. We're all human. Trans people's existence is merely proof that everyone can become closer to their fully actualized selves and therefore enrich each other's lives, communities, and beyond. I think that's the lesson. That's your inspiration. Will you listen? Thank you.
Thank you, Lilith. That was wonderful. Our third hymn this morning is number 169, We Shall Overcome, number 169, and we'll also have the offering.
Thank you.
Our notices this morning, fair trade tea and coffee will be served downstairs in the Daimler Hall. Please join us. There are copies of November's Auskult magazine on the table outside, also copies of other Unitarian magazines, so please take one. On Wednesday, we have the lunchtime service reflection. It's between 1:05 and 1:35, and it's available online and in the church. The book club's meeting this month is on the 30th of November at 7:30 p.m. This month's book is The Tenant of Windfell Hall by Anne Bronte. On Sunday, the 27th of November, the choir are meeting for practice for the Christmas carol service, which we're all looking forward to, sure. As we all start thinking about Christmas shopping, a little reminder that we will have our own Christmas tree and will be accepting gifts under the tree. This year, the gifts are in aid of Brother Kevin's Capuchin Centre. Gifts should be wrapped and indicated on the outside what age or gender the gifts will be suitable for. Please don't forget the adults and teenagers. Gift vouchers are also greatly appreciated. I would like to say a big thank you to all those involved in the service this morning. Kevin, our caretaker, Trevor for the beautiful music, Frank as our welcomer, our reader Peter, Lilith for her wonderful address, Maura for the beautiful flowers, Janet, Michael and Grania for volunteering with teas and coffees, and Gavin for setting up the music earlier on, Imagine. And a very special thank you to the cleaning team who did Trojan work in the church yesterday. Our final hymn this morning is number 108, My Life Flows On in Endless Song, 108.
Thank you.
we will have the final blessing. There is an old proverb, an African proverb, that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. Mother Teresa once said, if you want to bring happiness to the whole world, all you need to do is go home and love your family. Go in peace, and may God, or whatever you hold to be your truth, go with you. Amen.